Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for December 3rd. It's brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. I'm John Gibson, and with me as usual is Jim Allen. How's it going, bud?
It's going very well. Marathon Man Gibson, we're going to call you. Power Man, but, you know, hey, that's a good time, I'll tell you. We have a mutual acquaintance who gave John some stick when he had health trouble in a marathon. But I'll tell you, I told him the other day, I said, look, you know, he said he quit. I said, no, we quit. We quit when we didn't enter the marathon.
Well, I got through it. I'm calling this one a tie. This was my seventh one, and I was 3-3 going in. And I won the first half of the race, and the course beat me on the second half. So I'm calling it a tie because I got across the finish line.
All right. Good for you, man.
All right. Well, we got a great show. We're going to discuss the MVPs, and we're going to hit a bunch of other topics. So let's start clearing the bases. All right. So way back in November, we had the MVP votes and the announcement of the Central League and Pacific League MVPs. And we've had a cooling off period in that it's really cold outside now. And when they did when they made the announcement, it was still fairly warm. But I'm still hot about it. So,
yeah, I thought that cooling off sounded a little ominous.
I'm still hot about it. I'm happy for Yomiuri catcher and cleanup man Shinosuke Abe. He was the flat out winner. He had, I think, one of the greatest seasons by a catcher in a very long time. No arguments anywhere.
Well, you know my argument. So it was a great season because he played a few more games than he did last year. That's why people don't notice what a great season he had last year. But in any case, yeah, it was a tremendous season. And because he was listed because of two things, he's the MVP for two reasons.
Number one,
the Giants won the pennant.
Oh, that's the only reason that matters in Japan. So store game over.
Number two, listed among the league leaders because he had enough at bats.
Yeah.
That's the difference. That's the difference in this year and last year.
Yeah.
So anyway, moving along.
The only person who came to mind and whose numbers I started to really look at were Katsuya Nomura, who played with the Nankai Hawks. His numbers in 1965 when he won the Triple Crown, he had 42 home runs. He had 311 total bases, 110 RBIs, and he hit .320. Pretty amazing season. His OPS was 1,034. I mean, he just had a monster year. And Abe didn't quite reach that, but he was close in an era where the ball was supposedly dead and doesn't fly. So, congratulations to him. No problems there.
Okay, well, here's the thing about 1965 is Nomura won the Triple Crown, and his season probably wasn't as good as the one he had in 1963.
Yeah.
When he scored 104 runs and drove in 135 and set the Japan record with 52 home runs, you know, while batting .291 and drawing 84 walks. So, you know, he scored 104 runs, which is an amazing number in a season, although it was a 150-game season, which you have to count that. But anyway, here's the point. He won the MVP in 1965 because he won the Triple Crown.
Yeah.
He had a better season in 1963, and he was easily the best player in the league, but he was ignored. Okay, here we go.
Well, his batting average was a lot different, but in 63 by 30 points, but yeah.
So batting average is everything.
Yeah. So, no problem there. Abe was well deserved. Now, in the Pacific League, predictably, the media chose Nippon Ham starter Mitsuo Yoshikawa, as we figured would be the case.
John, it's November. It's December. Cool down.
Which is, you know what? We knew it was going to happen. It wasn't like last year where there was a more deserving, an obvious case for MVP who just didn't get the votes.
Go back to that. Why didn't he get the votes? Because he didn't set a record. He didn't set a record that people said, oh, we have to vote for him because he set the record.
Yeah.
Yeah, but for Yoshikawa, because he was the big pitcher on the team that won the pennant.
Yeah, well, let's set our record straight. I first want to open this up by saying, what does the, or asking this question, posing this question to you, what does the MVP mean to you? And I gave you a limit of about 300 words, so let's see what you came up with.
300 words. That was a word to the wise, or I said a word from the wise, because as everyone knows, this discussion could go on for a month of Sundays. So, okay. Well, simple, in my opinion, okay, there's two things going on here. One is that we know very, very little about everything in baseball. We know the amount of things we don't know vastly exceeds the number of things we do know. Okay, that's just a given. Now, given that, you have to give more weight to the things you do know as opposed to the things you don't. Okay?
Okay.
So if you can measure something and you can objectively prove that it's an accurate measurement, you have to give that more weight than subjective judgment, in my opinion, than individual subjective judgments. Okay, now, what's an MVP? It's the best estimate that I can make of whose effort won more meaningful games.
Whose effort won more meaningful games? Okay.
Now, what that does is it eliminates guys who are out of it. It eliminates talking about guys who ran up big numbers in games that were irrelevant to the pennant race, like 1964 when Sadaharu Oh was the MVP of the Central League because he set a home run record playing for a team that was out of the pennant race in August.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's kind of interesting paradox in Japan, isn't it?
You're coming up on 300 words.
Okay. Everything, you can count everything. There's no rule, you know, let's not count this, let's not count that. But the difference between two really great performances is often very tiny. The difference that two players, if I ask you, what's the difference between a great player and an ordinary player at the same position in a season? How many more wins? Now, the correct answer is, how many wins do you think that is? If you replaced an ordinary run-of-the-mill, maybe below 500 player with an MVP season, the answer is about 10 wins.
Really? You can arbitrarily just place a number on it?
Sure. Because if we know this because we have seasons, we can measure how much players produce.
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily directly lead to victories. That just leads to production.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That only leads to runs produced and runs prevented. It doesn't lead to victories.
Well, you can't say for sure that it leads to victories. All you can measure is the production. You can't say, well, this player had 10 more runs and those equal X number of victories.
Exactly. You cannot. But you can measure the effect that runs have on victories. You cannot measure his runs on victories.
Okay.
But you can measure the effect that runs have on victories with teams. If a team scores 10 more runs, they tend to win one more game. Now, this is a general thing and depends on the context.
Okay.
So, basically, the difference in run production, and this is what we can measure, and run prevention, which to some degree we can measure. The difference, and the reason you know this is because baseball is a team game, okay? And the difference between a great player and an ordinary player is not 20 wins a season. It's not 18 wins. It's really going to be in the range of 10 games. And if you're talking 10 wins, and if you're talking about two very good players, the difference is going to be 3 or 4. Okay. Now, that's objectively what we know. So I'm saying it's very hard to say, and if you give a player credit for more than that, then you have to take credit away from his teammates for the other things. So if you say, for example, player A picked up the rest of the team, then you have to take away the offensive and defensive credit that the other players actually accomplished in order to do that and say, supporting player C hit 330 off the bench, but that was because player A, the MVP candidate, picked everybody up. So we have to deduct, you know, there's only so many wins, you know, and everybody has to get a share of credit.
All right, so now you're coming up on 1,300 words, and I still don't know what the MVP means to you, which was the question.
The answer is what I said in the beginning. It's the best estimate you can make of who won more meaningful games.
Okay.
So you do the best analysis you can, and then you look and say, okay, what can't I measure? Is he a team leader? Is he is there something special? Now, the last thing is, and this is what you addressed, is every, we lack measures. You don't overestimate what you don't under, you can't objectively measure. But having said that, every out is not exactly the same value. Every inning is not exactly the same value. Every run is not exactly the same value because things happen in context. Unfortunately, unless you're going to go back and measure everyone, you can just say, well, it seems like he had more meaningful innings. That's the Asawa one. It seems like, it looks like, okay, so you give them a little credit, but you don't overlook the obvious. You know, it's like saying, I think something is, you know, the Mona Lisa is more, is better than the Grand Canyon because, you know, you can put it in a room.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to try to answer the question, and I think I'm going to stay within the 300-word limit. Sorry, listeners. to me, it's not a stats award. Okay, the stats play a role in it, and we have to start there, and we have to count numbers. And don't get me wrong. Let me finish. I'll let you finish. You talk about awarding, you know, not awarding a guy because his team won, but as I said on the last show, where's the value in losing? So you can't say that a guy is not as valuable just because his team won, or because he's on a better team. And value to me is a guy who produces consistently and helps his team win, because it's not the stat head position, but it's the real life position that, you know, as we talked about on the show last week, you have a number one player, you have a big guy, a go-to guy, or a guy you count on. And you, everything, not necessarily every inning, not necessarily every game, but you're trying to set up that guy and get him into position to help you produce runs. But if he's a cleanup hitter, or if he's batting third or fourth, if that guy is the guy you want at the plate, you're trying to get him up there. And a lot of players depend on those guys. You know, some of them say, hey, look, I'm a glove man. I'm not here to hit. I'm going to try to contribute as much as I can, but I'm not the guy who's going to win us the game. So, just like a great New York Jets coach once uttered, you play to win the game. You know, you got to win games. And that's probably why I'll never vote for a guy who is on a fourth or fifth place team or last place team, because I don't see the value, as we talked about last time as well. I won an MVP finishing on a last place team before. It was ridiculous. I didn't deserve it. I didn't think I didn't want it. And even in the show, I heard you say, yeah, you didn't deserve it. when I replayed the show, I heard you say that. But anyway, not everything is about the total numbers that you can measure. And there are fuzzy things out there that you can't measure. And just because a guy is a go-to guy in a pitching position where he comes in and he pitches maybe the seventh inning or the eighth inning, if he does it a lot and you win a bunch of games, there's a lot of value in there, and you can't just count the innings, in my opinion. And this is all opinion. I mean, I'm not going to say you're wrong and I'm right. This is all opinion, but you have to, when you have somebody you can lean on like that and he produces for you and your team wins, there is some value in that you can say, hey, this guy was a valuable player more so than somebody else in the league. Now, it's happenstance sometimes if the team wins or loses. You can have a guy produce, as Sadaharu Oh did, you said, 1964, and set a record, and the team doesn't do very well. But, you know, they can't control that. You can only control your production. You can't control whether you win or lose as a team.
But you just said that your games are only valuable if you're a winner because the goal is to win, and you can't, you just contradicted yourself.
Yes, but, I mean, I just said it's happenstance whether your team wins or loses, but...
Of course it is!
But your production, obviously, when you're playing and your team is producing and you are winning, isn't there value in that?
Yeah, okay, there is.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that just because the guy is producing but he's on a bad team, he's completely unworthy of getting votes. But I don't think I'm going to vote for a guy for MVP if he's coming from a fourth or fifth place team.
Okay, now you're talking about consolation prizes. Give him the B vote because he's not deserve. You just said he's not deserving of winning an MVP because you wouldn't give him a first place vote. If you can't give a guy a first place vote, then you're saying he's not deserving.
But his stats are good. I'm just saying, is that, you know, for value for me?
So that's a consolation prize. You didn't deserve it.
Well, yeah, it's a consolation prize, but I mean that's what you end up getting.
I don't believe in consolation prizes, just like I don't believe in giving a best nine award to somebody who's not, you know, giving somebody a best nine award if somebody else at the same position is the MVP, because it's ridiculous. You give the best nine to the guy who has the most product value at his position, not the guy who's runner up because he didn't win nothing. That's ridiculous. The other thing is, okay, well, my question is this, with that position. Okay, I'm not wedded to stats, but I am wedded to what do we know. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And if you leave out stats, and say what he produced, only what he produced in the situations that we all know about, and of course this is the conundrum you have in judging, for example, fielding by observation or anything by observation, is that you can't see everything.
Right.
Okay. So the problem here is that, I mean, I'm all for what you're saying is, if we can measure the absolute value, you know, if we can, and I have to say use the word measure because in the essence we are comparing players without recourse to their stats, which is okay with me. You know, if you can say this, we know, we believe this guy created this enormous amount of value for his team without recourse to his stats, then yeah, great. But the problem is everybody who says that ends up with the same discussion, which is, oh, and he hit, and he did. These are his numbers.
Yeah, I'm not saying disregard the numbers.
That the numbers, it's not a question of numbers.
No, I'm not even saying that it's not a question of numbers per se.
And ask this question, why would Hiroyuki Nakajima conceivably be an MVP when his team didn't win the pennant?
Here's what I'm thinking. All right. The thing is, and I meant to go through the MVP information on the voting just to read over it and see if they offered any ideas or any rules or any guidance on how to vote. But you know what they don't do? They don't say, okay, here's the formula. You add this, you add A plus B plus C plus D and divide by something, and here's the formula, and this is going to be who the MVP award is for. They don't do it.
Of course they don't.
And essentially saying by not doing that is it's not the best stats award.
Agreed. And why it's the best stats award, and why I agree with you completely? Because you can have a guy who has the best season in the world.
Statistically.
He has the best numbers in the world. Because, again, I hate to say the best season when, you know, if he has the best season, he's the MVP. But if he has the best numbers, he hits the most home runs, and he drives in the most runs, and he scores the most runs, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say he scores the most, he leads the league, he plays a key defensive position, he scores the most runs, and he drives in the most runs. And he breaks up his team because he's a divisive jerk.
Mm-hmm.
No. And then he is not, obviously, he's not the MVP because of all the negatives. Okay. That's what we're talking about. Is the guy, you know, you have to, I'm saying, basically, you measure what you can measure, but you have to consider everything else. Is the guy, do these innings look valuable? Is your argument about Nakajima, which I love, you know, that he picked up the team at a key point, carried them when they were playing really badly, which was the first 5 or 6 weeks of the season. And the answer to that is he and, as I mentioned before, Takumi Kuriyama, they're essentially the same. And Kuriyama was the number three hitter, was the leadoff hitter, and try to tell me that's not a valuable position, and you'll get an argument for that. A valuable offensive position. That's a really old, and I'll use a word that's in the dictionary. That's an old fart position that hitting, getting on base when there's nobody on and you have a chance to set up a big inning is a clutch batting situation. And Kuriyama was up there doing that when they weren't playing well. It was essentially Kuriyama and Nakajima. Okay.
Right, and I agree. I just, when Kuriyama got hurt and disappeared and Nakajima stayed around, then I'm not going to award a guy for half a season.
Agree with that. So that's a perfectly valid argument. I'm not going to say, you know, pick this guy. I mean, that's, but you have to consider that. Okay, how much more valuable is that than somebody else? Now, I agree with you that Nakajima was the MVP, so it's really a hard argument. And I generally agree with you on who the MVPs are. For the simple reason is that the basis of your decision, you can say it's not about stats, but the basis of your decision is about stats. This is the, everybody who says that Mike Trout is not the MVP, because we're not interested in stats, voted Miguel Cabrera the MVP because they are interested in stats. it's sort of like what they're talking about is stats we like, and stats we don't like.
Or they're just giving more weight to certain kinds of stats, like the Triple Crown was a rare stat. But, and I agree. I mean, you know, you look at Mike Trout and he had a season that no one's ever had,
right,
compared to a season that no one's had in 40 years.
Right.
And that was a difference. And definitely Mike Trout got the most outstanding performance award. And I would have made him co-MVPs. I don't think you can really separate either one because I think the Angels won more games than the Tigers eventually did.
Won more games in a tougher – they won more games in a division that had three of the top five teams in MLB.
Yeah, so for getting back to our position, it's, you know, there's fuzzy stuff out there, and I can't say that it's not numbers-based. Obviously, we're going to look at the numbers and say who helped produce and who helped this team win these games. But –
let's put it this way. Numbers help you separate the completely undeserving. You know, they help, you can take, look at a number and say, this guy does not deserve it because the gap is too big to, sustain believability. You know, if you say, this pitcher pitched six, I mean, this is the problem we have with Asao's Golden Glove. He fielded 15 balls. Or 20 balls. I think he had 15 assists and 5 putouts in 2011. And they gave him the Golden Glove. And it's like, whoa.
Yeah, they're not thinking. But here's the thing is, you know, Yoshikawa came away with the MVP. I don't know how it doesn't sit well with me. I don't really think he was an MVP guy in the sense that he wasn't there on a daily basis helping the team. I'm not sure that he won enough games, but I knew they were going to talk about him for MVP. I brought it up even in the middle of the season when he had double digits in victories, and this is a guy who hadn't won a game the previous season. I think the previous two seasons. Three seasons. So, yeah, obviously you're going to bring in the fuzzy, as you like to put it in the last show, argument, and once you do that, you're going to get stupid voting. My problem with the whole voting was that Nakajima didn't even make the top five.
Yeah.
And all the people, all the players, I can't remember, there was one non-fighter in the group of top five, and I can't even remember who that was at the moment.
Thanks.
Must have been Setsu, yeah. Tadashi Setsu of the SoftBank Hawks. Other than that, there were, you know, guys like Inaba who, you know, he does come out every day and he does work hard and he does set an example and he does come up in the clutch. He didn't have a great season. He is that kind of guy you could see as an MVP, but he just didn't have, statistically, he wasn't there for me.
If they had made the voting in July, Inaba would have been the MVP because he had the best first half of anybody in NPB, but, you know, he was tremendous. He just didn't have a second half.
Right, right. So, you know, I know it takes stats to come up with the vote.
So we agree it's not all about stats. We both agree on that, but what we disagree on is how much weight to give to things we don't really understand.
And that's what I'm saying. And there's no, like I said, there is no formula. They don't give us a formula. We don't have one. It's up to everybody to figure out for themselves what they're going to give weight to.
The problem is there's way too many numbskulls doing it.
I agree. Obviously.
If I'm voting for it, then there's one more numbskull doing it. So.
Oh, no, but yeah, I mean, you know what? I would like there to be some guidelines, some rules, some, you know, let's not pick these kinds of players. Not like you said, let's not pick a guy just because he had a record.
Yeah, that's what I think. I would say don't pick a guy just because he wins on, he's on a winning team. I mean, like I said, you could, if you say the purpose of win, you know, the problem with every subjective argument is that you instantly open up, you know, it's an open-ended argument. You know, if you think, and I thought I would have, if I had a vote, Nakajima would have been my number one vote in the Pacific League.
Definitely mine as well.
And this team finished second. And he didn't play well in the last week of the, you know, he didn't play that well in the last week of the season when they could have won the pennant. So, to me, it's not about the last week of the season. Although, you know, there's that argument. You know, that's the clutch time. Well, if he had been a little more clutch, they would have won the pennant. You know,
had he hit
about two more home runs in big game, you know, he hit one home run in a big game against the Fighters in the final week of the season, he would have been the MVP. Because the Lions would have won the pennant, and he would have been the MVP.
And you just think about that. You're talking one swing. It's outrageous. It's preposterous.
Right.
But, you know, we're talking about a whole season, not a week, not a one at bat, not...
But that's essentially what the argument so often comes down to, and perhaps as much in Japan as it is in America, where you read an Associated Press basketball story and it says, the guy scored 44 points, but they lost because he was 0-for-3 in the fourth quarter, the fourth period. You know, he missed a shot in the last 5 minutes. That's why they lost the game, not because, you know, I mean, here's a guy. And this is a good analogy because this is a guy who makes a game. I mean, in some respects, in the offensive respect, he makes the game, and they blame him for losing.
Well, that's just like the guy whose player who hits two home runs in the middle of the game and comes up with the bases loaded and one out, let's say, in a late inning situation and strikes out, and then the next guy comes up and hits a little dribbler,
right?
That goes for an RBI single and breaks the tie, and he's the hero of the game.
Yeah.
You can't put the value on that particular 30-foot hit.
Exactly.
As opposed to the guy who hit 600 or 700 feet worth of home runs for you.
Sure.
Who carried you through the game. I mean, you needed it all.
Exactly. You need it all. And that's, you could not have said it any better than that. You need every little bit to win a pennant. You need every little bit to win a game. I mean, it takes every game. It takes every contribution to make a game. The starting pitcher who allows 3 runs in 7 innings and leaves with a 2-run lead is, as you know, that getting the game to that, to advancing the game to a position, a better position where you can win it, is what every player's job is to do in every situation. And they all have value. Now, does the dribble hit in the end of the game have value? Yes, because it has value because other players gave you that situation. You know, you didn't create, the guy who gets the dribble hit didn't put the guys on base.
Right.
That's the thing. And that's why home runs are more valuable, because nobody put those guys, you know, nobody put yourself on base to drive in the run with the dribble hit. So, and of course the game situation is different. Hitting a home run and then, you know, when you're 10 runs down in the ninth inning is, yeah, who cares?
Yeah. Well, it's a symbiotic relationship that goes on. The pitchers need the hitters to hit. The hitters need the pitchers to keep them in the game so that their hits produce game-winning situations.
And that's the difficulty I have with a lot of finishing stats. And what I mean by finishing stats, I mean saves, wins, RBIs. Because basically they give the credit to the person who is there at the, you know, who delivers the baby.
Yeah. And I understand, and, you know, like I said, I've written about a lot of guys. You know, one of the reasons I do the blog is to see who's doing what and to who, in these leverage situations where games are on the line. And, you know, I end up writing a lot of names that I keep writing down, and I see them all the time, or they're scoring the runs, they're knocking them in, they're making defensive plays. It helps me stay in touch with what's going on every day on a daily basis throughout both leagues. But I try not to give too much weight to them, but they are big plays in late game situations because, again, like I said earlier, you're trying to win games out there, and to produce is always a positive. you're never going to get minus points for producing.
Simply that, and my counter argument to that is not that what you're saying is invalid, but that I believe the weight you give to them exceeds my ability to understand that. Is that the weight you give to the wow factor of a, and I don't mean this in a bad way, the of having a star step up, be expected to do the job and do the job, exceeds what I think is reasonable.
Yeah, and I understand that because you can't measure it all the time. It's not, like I said, you can measure, yeah, you can measure the production.
Right.
But you can't measure, let's say, when they do get the job done, what that really means in the locker room to all those players, you know, who tried to get that guy in the position. You can't measure that.
Yeah, I mean, and there's always going to be the argument of, and here's another one, and somebody said recently on a website that I belong to, there was a discussion about it's the most valuable player, not the best player. And to me, that discussion, and I think I mentioned this on your Facebook page, is that, yeah, I understand best and most valuable. Valuable is what you do. Best is quality in the sense of what you're capable of doing.
Well, you know, and I saw that argument, and I'm thinking, well, most outstanding.
Well, no.
Meaning?
No, well, let me, to put it in sense, the most valuable, if you have two guys, I'll go back to the single game analogy. You have two players, one player goes 0-1 for 4 with a dribble hit that wins the game, and one guy goes 0-4, or he goes 1-for, one guy goes 1-for-4 with a dribble hit that wins the game. The other guy goes 0-for-4 with 4 line drives that are luckily caught and, you know, has good at bats. The guy who gets a dribble hit is most valuable because his hit actually helped win the game. There's no question that he was most valuable.
Right.
The best player is the guy who had the line drives. And he's the guy I would want. If I had a choice for who's going to bat tomorrow, I'd get the guy who got the line drives because he's the guy who has, I think, the highest quality and the most likely to reproduce that performance the next day as opposed to the guy who got lucky.
Right. And you remember I asked Alonzo Powell a long time ago. I said, look, if you were in a game-winning situation or a leverage situation and you're batting and you got a line drive and you made an out, or you got a little blooper to win the game, which one would you take? And he was conflicted. He said, well, of course I want to win the game, and so I take the blooper, but, you know, I want to hit a line drive.
Sure, because that's what you're there to do. You're there to give yourself the best chance of a result, which
right.
Have a good at bat. It's all about, you know, it's all about the fundamentals. Good at bat, you try to get a good swing, you know, you get the best pitch you can to hit, you put the best swing you can on the ball, and, you know, you hope for the best possible results. Because the chances, when the ball comes off the bat and you hit a line drive, the chances are far better that you're going to get a good result than if you're jammed and you hit a dribbler.
I gotcha. All right, well, I don't think this settles anything, but it was good talking about it. I just to get the last word in before we move on, I don't see the award as the most outstanding performance. I see the award as most valuable, and the value is helping your team and producing for your team and helping that team have success. Now, whether that's winning a championship or finishing in third, whatever it is, your team has had success and you help contribute to it. So,
I agree.
All right, let's talk about something else. Let's change the subject and talk about something, what, fun?
As opposed to what we were just talking about?
As opposed to things that make your blood boil. Rocket, the former Rocket Boy, and I think we touched on this before, Lyota Igarashi is back from the United States, and he is with the SoftBank Hawks. A reliever who I don't really know how much he has left. He's going to a league that hasn't seen him, so maybe that'll help, but I don't think it's going to hide mediocre stuff, if that's what the case is. I don't know what his velocity, I've noticed that it's been going down. I don't know what he learned over in the States, but the Hawks, I don't know that they needed, per se, help in the bullpen. Starting pitching would certainly have been their, should have been their first target since they lost a bunch of pitchers last year, but I think they're going to be fine. I'm wondering what he's going to do for them, though, in that bullpen.
Well, I think we can start calling him calling him Ballistic Boy, because he's just dropping.
No more Rocket, huh? How about Firecracker?
Rocket is burned out, and he's gone ballistic. Okay. Will he help? I don't know. They're just sort of – the Hawks, a lot of the moves have been kind of small, and over the past couple of years have been kind of small and moving people around in and out. Is he going to help? I don't think he's going to hurt. I think he knows how to pitch. I think there's a comfort zone in America. He did actually pitch quite well in the minors, but he had a real problem. He pitched okay a bit last year in the 2011, and then this year it was like he was in three different situations.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was three different major league teams this year.
Yeah, Toronto, New York, and where did he start? The Mets? No, I can't remember. I'll look it up.
It's Toronto in spring, so just Toronto and New York Yankees this year. But every time when he came up, basically he had two games and didn't have any time to adjust, which is what you really need if you're going to have any prolonged success. And they basically were with the Yankees, they were looking at him as a roster. You know, they just needed somebody on the roster to take the place of somebody who wasn't there. They didn't really want him.
Right.
They gave him one chance to pitch and he didn't do well. But he was outstanding in the minors, which is why, you know, the Yankees acquired him. And I think he can do pretty well here. He's a very positive guy. He's a good guy to have on the team. So is he going to hurt anybody? No. Is he going to help? That remains to be seen.
All right. Yeah, I'm thinking that, certainly Shota Takeda, this year's, what was he, the runner-up for Rookie of the Year?
It's a fairly close vote. It was 119 to 80.
Yeah, strange. But anyway, not just because he only pitched half a season, but you know, guys like him, I think what the Hawks are going to aim at is, obviously, Falkenborg was injured a lot last year. They still don't know Mahara. I don't know if he's coming back. So I think they have some holes to fill there. So perhaps he can fill one of those and he can do well for him. What about, Takeshi Hidaka joining Hanshin? What's your opinion of that? Mine is that he wasn't an everyday player for Oryx. I don't think he's really an everyday player for the Tigers, but he gives them the ability to mix and match and do some different things at the end of games.
Well, that's pretty accurate. He basically lost his starting, and this is kind of weird to say this, but he lost his starting job to Fumihiro Suzuki about 3 years ago. And you have to ask Fumihiro who, and you'd say, wow, Fumihiro Suzuki, right, he was a 2000 Olympian. You know, he was the guy who caught when Shinosuke Abe was still playing he caught in the Sydney Olympics when Shinosuke Abe was still playing it on the team from Chuo University, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh yeah, he must have been a big player because he was a better catcher than Abe was when he was 22 years old. Fumihiro Suzuki is a career backup. Basically, you know, he prevents pass balls. And he does that as well. He was a guy who never really fulfilled the potential Oryx expected of him. They had really high hopes for him. They bought in a foreign coach just to coach him for about 4 years, Roger Hansen.
Mm-hmm.
And, it just never really, he a little bit when he was young, but catching got better. But, it just didn't take off. He's a veteran. You know, it's hard to say anything better about him than he's a veteran who was a borderline all-star, you know, third catcher on the all-star team a few times. And I don't see him making an impact.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, he's never really been much of a hitter. He's got occasional power. But like I said, it'll do is if Wada decides to make a move late in the game, he won't have to hesitate and he won't have to worry about who's going to catch coming after the catcher he pinch hits for or pinch runs for or something. He'd be able to make moves in the middle of the game or the end of the game where.
He's not just as good a catcher as the guys they have now. You know, to be honest, I don't think he's not a big improvement over Akito Fuji. Akito Fuji's biggest problem is that he keeps getting taking foul tips on the ends of his fingers.
Now, other moves, this Fukudome to Hanshin or to the Bay Stars thing is progressively getting interesting here. The DeNA Bay Stars said they were going to create Fukudome Excite Seats just for him, but I don't think they can offer as much money as Hanshin could. Yeah, whatever that does for him. He can't take that home and eat that. So it looks like Hanshin can offer more money, and it looks like the Bay Stars are just trying to woo him with stuff. If you ask me, you know, Hanshin makes sense for him.
He always wanted to play. You know, he's a Osaka guy, and you know, he did when he was coming out of high school. The three teams, the two teams he wanted to play for were the Giants, Dragons, and Tigers. And then he was drafted instead by the Kintetsu Buffaloes, who did not sign him. He went to corporate league ball, and then came out with the Dragons. So yeah, I think you know. Tigers are a good match for him emotionally. Plus, you know, he's a pretty good outfielder. Koshien has a tremendously large outfield. He can still run well for his age. I think he can, and he's basically a line drive. I think he's a perfect match for Koshien.
Yeah, he makes sense in left there. But then again, you know, you hit in that bandbox in Yokohama, and he could be paired. Well, not paired, but. Be part of the Ramichan and Tsutsugo trio in the heart of the lineup and probably play right field in Yokohama. And all of a sudden, that's a real quality lineup that can help produce, you know, enough to get past the pitching staff.
Two, if you consider the other things, you know, if everything goes right for DeNA, they're going to be mortgaged for the next century. You know, and they'll acquire another big slugger we're about to refer to play first base. They're not going to actually have enough positions on the field to play all the guys that can hit.
You know, they actually should probably maybe get Alex Ramirez, pull him in, and see if he can play first base.
Well, that clogs up the infield further because the guy who's very close to Alex Ramirez in production this year just re-signed yesterday, which is Norihiro Nakamura.
Yeah, nobody, yeah.
That's him because, you know, Alex Ramirez needs 7 hits to reach 2,000 and Nakamura needs 11. How did we miss him?
He snuck up on us.
Because he's been playing for Rocktown. I think that's it. He's the ultimate Ronin. You know, he goes out of a contract dispute in 2006 with Oryx and nobody will sign him except Ochiai. Everybody went like, we don't even think a tryout's worthy. You know, we don't even want to see if he's any good.
Yeah. And the Bay Stars also got back Hitoshi Tamura. Yep. He's back where he started before leaving. What was it, 2007 to go to the SoftBank Hawks. And that was the trade that involved Hayato Terahata, who's going back to Fukuoka, where he started. And I think those guys were both involved in that deal.
Correct.
Yep. See, I have an excellent memory sometimes.
Like Hidaka, Terahara's leaving Oryx. So we've got those two leaving Oryx, one going to Fukuoka and one going to Hanshin. Now, here's another one, which was talked about at the end of the season, at the end of the Climax series, which was, are the Dragons going to be able to re-sign Tony Blanco? And the word was no. And Tony, personally, and I believe he was sincere about this, said, I want to stay in Nagoya. And you're a Nagoya guy, and you understand, you know, it's a great place to live.
It is.
And, it's a place one can be attached to. But it looks like his agent, he through his agent have not been able to reach a deal with the Dragons. I think their cash flow is beginning to hurt. Their attendances have been terrible, in the last 2 years. And I think their cash flow is having a problem. And Tony Blanco is the Bay Stars were linked to him from the beginning. I mean, everybody was saying, oh, we think he's going to go to the Bay Stars. And this is a month ago.
Yeah.
So that could happen. That could be quite a lot with Michon. And of course, then where is Nakamura and Blanco? You're going to platoon him at first base?
Somebody's going to have to play catcher.
Well, Nakamura's a former catcher. He came up as a catcher, so.
Go back.
Yeah. I was, speaking of that, you know, when he gets his 2000th hit, I was thinking about, Atsuya Furuta the other day, and for a good reason. He's one of two catchers with 2000 hits, but he's one of the 42 guys in Japan with 2000 hits. I think it's 42. It's in that area. It might be 39 because of my data. Functionality issues with the database, but because of those guys, about a fourth started their careers as catchers.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that's great. That's good. That's good stuff.
Yeah. So it is interesting. And there's another thing about catchers, which I won't get into, but anyway, so those are the big moves coming up. And, we've also had a couple of guys, coming from the States. I saw one moved this morning and I can't remember his name, Shinichi Dragon signed somebody.
All right, well, we'll get to that stuff on maybe on the next show, before the last show of the year on December 17th. All right, so let's go to fielding questions. All right, so we had a comment from Claudio and then a question from Claudio. So the comment was earlier on, right after the MVP voting, and I think I sensed some angst in his comments.
Angst? Angst. That's a one. You know, I don't know how many syllables angst is, but it's a big word, John.
And Claudio wrote, I guess they should change the name of the award to MVP of the winning team. And then he says, according to the Kyoto News note, only two Central League players belonging to non-pennant winning teams received the award in its 63-year history. Sadaharu Oh in 1964, and the other was?
Sadaharu Oh in 1974. And, okay, thank you for reading Kyoto, Claudio. And I wrote that note, to be honest, although what I wrote was that only two times as a player won the MVP on a non-pennant winner. And as we spoke earlier, O won it in 64 because of his enormous home run records for a team that was going nowhere. But in the Pacific League, we've had 9 Pacific League players who've won on non-pennant winners, which is pretty amazing.
It's pretty amazing. There's a precedent, and yet Nakamura yesterday, it seems like yesterday, the people's choice, Nakamura last year didn't win it with the great season that he had. So,
you know, and actually I researched this, and I had this, you know, it what it looks like is that the Pacific League voters are more wide open, but I do not think that is really the case. When you actually look at the voting over the years, the votes in the Pacific League have been essentially, they've led more to guys who have eye-popping numbers for losers have gotten a lot of votes. But in terms of just steady performances and, you know, just overall, oh, this guy's a can't-miss MVP, You need some kind of a tagline. You know, it's the 1963-1965 Katsuya Nomura case. 1963, he had one of the best seasons in Japanese baseball history, and he was not the MVP. But in 1965, Triple Crown winner, and he was the MVP.
Right.
So Again, here goes to sort of like a headline. If you can make if you have a sexy stat line, you can be MVP. And I think what has happened is simply that the Pacific League has had more guys. The Pacific League has had a better talent distribution in the sense that there have been so many big players playing for non-pennant winners. You know, the big stars have been more evenly distributed in the Central League, where they tend to be lumped with the Giants and Tigers and pennant-winning teams. So I think what has happened is that the Pacific League has just had more guys with these sexy numbers. Iwakuma a few years ago, Ichiro in 1994, Kadota when he reached, he had an amazing season at the age of 40.
Yeah.
And Hideo Nomo's rookie year when he played for a second place team. So these things are, I think this has happened more often in the Pacific League. But if you actually look at the year to year stats, I think the Central League voters tend to give more first place and second place votes to guys who aren't on the pennant winners. But the problem is the bias is still there towards the best player.
Which really, really, really makes me think, why did they not make Nakamura the MVP last year when he hit more home runs than a single team? Anyway, now Claudio also sent us a question for the show. He said, will Atsuya Furuta make it to the Japanese Hall of Fame in first ballot? I think he deserves it. Now, Randy Bass and Boomer Wells are now eligible in the experts division. Do either one of them have a chance to be elected there? And to answer the first question, Furuta on the first ballot, I think he's going to get in just based on the body of work, which is what the Hall of Fame is for.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think he's in.
Yeah, I think Furuta, right, Nomura. In my personal opinion, Nomura was with Yogi Berra and perhaps a couple of other arguments, Gary Carter and
Johnny Bench.
Johnny Bench, that group. This is a guy who has an argument to say he was the best catcher to ever play baseball.
I'm there with you.
And I think Furuta is also, I think you'd have to consider Furuta also in that situation.
I think he joins the conversation, although I wouldn't be making the conversation for him, the argument for him, but I'd certainly put him in the conversation.
And I think you can for the simple reason that now the hard part is arguing what he would do if he were, you know, facing better competition. That's an interesting argument. I'm not going to go into it now, but I think one could make that in the sense that he was kept in their leagues, you know, because he couldn't play. He's played in Japan because he didn't have recourse not to play in Japan. Okay. Should be on the first ballot. In my opinion, yes, but the dynamics don't work like that because you have all these guys who have been building momentum, in the Hall of Fame ballot. Furuta joins with, the group this year includes Masato Yoshi and, Shinji Sasaoka and, Yukio Tanaka. And I think Furuta is the Hall of Famer in that group, obviously. There's no doubt about it. He's a Hall of Famer. Interestingly enough, they have an experts division, which is analogous to the old-timers committee, the Veterans Committee in America. And they've looked at guys who are now out of baseball for 21 years. They hand them off to the experts, the difference being the players division is voted on by writers.
Right, the players division meaning the regular Hall of Fame and the experts division meaning the consolation prize for those who didn't get in after 20 years.
Yes, and amateurs and this and that and, you know, everybody else.
Miscellaneous.
Right, and the difference is that the players award is voted on by a group of roughly 200 veteran baseball writers who have 15 years of being a baseball writer. Now, I'm not certain if that means that in 4 years I'll be eligible because working at Kyoto provides some interesting twists on that definition.
Mm-hmm.
I might be eligible in 4 years to be voting for the Hall of Fame, which could be another headache I'll enjoy. But the experts is made up of people who are selected by the current members of the current players who are in the Hall of Fame. So that's kind of interesting. It's all kinds of amateurs and old guys and a different viewpoint. But, yeah, they might say, oh, Randy Bass, who's on the ballot? Oh, good. Let's make him a winner. And
yeah, well, since Randy's still such a popular figure and plays in some of those old-timer games, and that's why he was here this past summer when we got to do an interview with him. So I think he'll get in for sure in that division.
I wonder. But it's a smaller group. You need fewer votes. The players, as for... Anyway, so that's the MVP stuff, and those announcements, I believe, are going to be made in January, so we'll see who gets elected.
Okay, so then we have a question from Matt Vernon of Kansas City, Missouri. He wrote in, he said, hey guys, will you do an episode on guys who would, could, or should be posted, and where they will be, and how much they will make? So that's for a future show, but I made a short list to get started, and we will try to do that show here in the off season. That's going to be really difficult to try to guess and see who could, would, or should be posted. There are a lot of guys who could, obviously. I don't know that there's anyone who should, and it's up to the teams to decide who would be posted. So my list would be at the top, Kenta Maeda of the Hiroshima Carp.
Yeah.
He's still fairly young and already has a Sawamura Award. Masahiro Tanaka, if there's anything left of him, because he throws a lot of innings for the Rakuten Eagles, and there just might not be much left for the United States for a major league team. By then, he might just be relief worthy or something. I don't even know. Tadashi Setsu of SoftBank, and he's a fringe guy, but he's been really good, a rookie of the year. So he's got potential. He's still fairly young, but I don't know. And then as for position players, I really couldn't find many at all right now. There's no Ichiro's hanging around out there. There are no guys like Fukudome, no Iguchi's out there in my opinion. But Hisayoshi Chono of the Yomiuri Giants is an excellent ball player who, the only problem is his age, so he would have to be posted because I think he'd get up there in age, so.
I would say Sakamoto. I would think, some of the guys I would think of being posted are already gone, so yeah, but Sakamoto and Chono were the first to come to mind. I'd love to see young players go over there when they can really take advantage of, you know, the growth curve of big guys with, who are still developing physically and mentally, and, you know, developing physically, growing into the job as opposed to guys who are trying to hammer the kinks that have been, hammered into them in Japanese baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought about Sakamoto, and then I decided I didn't think he would want to go over there, A, and then I don't know, he's still so wiry, thin, and small, but maybe he would grow into the body, maybe he would go as a free agent, maybe not as a posting, and then he'd have the body to handle major league season.
Well, I think we were discussing that the other day, and I was discussing this yesterday with my coworker. I think one of the things we notice is that Japanese infielders who go over have issues, and I think it's not necessarily a bond issue, it's as much as a knowledge issue. A knowledge of how to train and how to prepare yourself for a Japanese season, and the Japanese version of training and conditioning running into the buzzsaw of a major league season where the challenge is completely different, and where time constraints are different, the travel. It's like, it's analogous to a major league hitter coming over here and looking at a Japanese umpire and saying, are you crazy? Who told you that was a strike? And Japanese players are going over and they're saying, who told you this is a season? This is not a season. This is torture. And prepare for it. The way teams in Japan prepare their players for the hardships of the end of the season is to torture them, to make them run more. You know, and to make them do more.
Right.
I have this feeling that the calamitous number of injuries for lack of a better word, this catastrophic injury. I mean, Akinori Iwamura, how this conversation occurred, was a very, very old guy with the Swallows, and he goes over to the major leagues and he just gets chewed up. Iguchi was a rock in Japan. He comes back like these guys are coming back from a hospital. They're coming back on a hospital ship.
Yeah.
Walking wounded. And I think it's the way they prepare and the way they, what their knowledge of training to suit a Japanese season is ingrained in them. And it really needs somebody like Darvish who has a different view and who is not, who questions authority and questions, the accepted knowledge and the conventional wisdom of Japanese baseball at a very fundamental level to adapt and adjust to a meaningful training regimen in the majors, and I think that's the major issue.
All right.
Okay.
All right. So anyone else who wants to rant for a minute or so about the MVP voting, go ahead and send it. You can use Japan Baseball Weekly as your forum, as your platform, and we'll play it on the show. If you just want to make a comment or send us a question, you can do that too. Do that via MP3 and send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and we will enjoy it on the show for sure.
And we're looking forward to hearing from you. It's always better to hear your voices. I mean, it breaks up the John and me and whoever.
Was I on the show?
That I heard.
All right. So, and we want to thank Matt Vernon of Kansas City, Missouri, and Claudio of Toronto for sending in their questions and comments. And we will see you next time. Last show of the year will be December 17th, and then we'll see you in the new year. Thanks for listening.
Thanks. Enjoy the off-season, guys.
All right. Jim wanted to say that. We'll pass it off for now. Thanks, guys, for listening. We'll see you next time.